You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Karen C.L. Anderson. We talk about a time when Karen made the decision to cut off contact with her mom. We talk about why she did that, what were the things going on in her life that led to that decision. And we also talk about what impact making that change has had on her life and her experience. So this comes up in the interview, but I'll mention it here too. It's my belief that, or my experience, that people can have very strong personal opinions about the quote unquote correct way to be in a family. And that can include feeling like it's okay to judge the relationships that other people might have with their parents or their children or anybody else in their life. One of my hopes or intentions with this show, with this program, is to share stories of experience in a way that might sometimes offer a different experience than what you're used to, and do that without any preconceived agenda or judgment on its own, so that you can listen and hear the experience and make your own decisions now and forever. You'll have to let me know if I do a decent job of that or not. And now it's time. Let's get to the interview. Karen C.L. Anderson, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm happy you're here today. Are you ready for a fun chat?
Yes, ma'am. Let's do it.
All right. Yay. I ask everybody the same first question, and that is, what part of the world do you call home?
I live on the southeastern Connecticut shoreline in a town called Waterford.
Beautiful, beautiful. Next get to know you question. What is one way that you like to recognize or honor something that is worthy of celebration in your life, big or small?
It's so funny because I am not much of a celebrator, which doesn't mean that I don't recognize and honor meaningful things in my life. But I'm not much of a traditionalist in that, like, oh, it's our anniversary, we do this thing. It's just not how we roll.
Very good.
But that, again, it's like in hearing the question and answering it, I do celebrate a lot. And I think in like, how would I define that celebration? And it's simply allowing myself to have the feeling of excitement.
Love it.
Or joy.
Love it. That is a terrific answer. All right, Karen, today we are going to talk about a decision that you made, making the decision to cut off communication with your mom. And I think that sometimes the words I see being used for this are going no contact. Mm-hmm. So the first question that I have for you on this topic is, how long ago was it that you did this?
So it was in 2010, towards the end of 2010. And it's funny because I don't know if the word going no contact was used then.
Okay.
I know that it, you know, somewhere in there, it quickly became the thing. And, you know, the other word is estrangement, which
estrangement. Yeah. Family estrangement. Yeah. That's the other word I hear sometimes. Yeah. So it's been 15 years.
Yes.
15 years. All right. So I'm actually very thankful that you are brave enough to talk about this. It's a topic that I think can bring up strong emotions in people anytime you talk about family constructs and what are the rules for families, because people just get really, really, really strong opinions about this kind of stuff. And so I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions. If at any time I ask something that feels too personal, just tell me to buzz off and we will do something else. So would you describe, and this is not as a judgment question, even though it might sound that way, it's just a characterization of the conversation, things that I think people might be thinking in their head and not asking. Would you describe this as something that was an easy decision that you made for yourself?
It was not easy at all. and it was many years in the making. And at the time, it was, I guess, based on my perspective now, it was less a decision than a reaction.
Oh, that's really interesting. All right. So what I'm hearing is that even though you could call this a decision, it was, you were responding to things that were happening in your life. So you were in a spot where you had to pick one way to go.
Yeah.
All right. That's really interesting. Okay. So I'm just curious, do you have siblings?
Yes, and it's complicated. I am my mother's only biological child.
Okay.
My mother and my stepfather, who got married when I was five, they adopted a little boy who was 9 months younger than I when I was nine.
Okay. So he was like 8. Yeah.
And my father and my stepmother, who got married around the same time when I was about five, they had two children, when I was nine and then 11. And I'm very close to my sister, she's 9 years younger than I am. So she's a half sister. So I
Yeah.
have siblings, but not in the traditional sense.
Well, we use that word traditional, although I am just a person who thinks that families come in all different kind of constructs. And the construct that you laid out is actually very similar to what the big picture of like my adult family is. I have stepkids, and then both parts of the family added children. So there's like it's a mix. It's a blend, and we
I'm a
just roll with
stepmom
it. There you go.
too.
So when I think, we call it traditional, and I'm never going to say that it's not stigmatized and things like that, but I think that it's a weird thing because it's so common, and yet people still want to hold on to this idea that it's traditional, or unusual or anything like that. So anyway, those are my opinions that nobody should listen to, maybe not even me, but that is where I weigh in on that.
No, I agree
So
100%.
So shortly after, part of the story that you shared with me on the intake form is that shortly after you went no contact, after you cut off contact with your mom, your dad died. And this is a double whammy, but they were divorced and had lived apart for a long time. So this was just both sides of your parental tree just sort of shrank away all in a very short time.
Yes.
That's a lot to deal with.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Do you want the
You
detail?
can. You can, like, if you can, because that's all that I have of that story. So I'm sure that there's some reason that it ties in. But yeah, feel free to color in the dots and share why you include both of those things.
The decision or the reaction to cutting ties with my mother happened as a result of, again, it's so funny because, like as you said, right, estrangement, all that, is it an easy decision? And I think culturally we look at people making these decisions as they're snap decisions, there's no reason why, oh, it's something you heard on the internet, blah 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 blah, and it isn't. And so there was lots leading up, my childhood, young adulthood, the relationship that I had with my mother and why it was the way it was. And so it was many, many, many things leading up to that moment in time, which, as I said, was at the end of, it was in December of 2010. And I had had a visit with my mom. I think it was at Thanksgiving. My husband and I went up with her and her husband to Maine, which is where they live. And that visit was terrible. And I think in hindsight, I'm starting to see that even though I wouldn't have used this language, I just never felt safe with my mom.
Okay.
And I was trying and trying and trying, and also thinking, well, there must be something wrong with me that I can't seem to get along with my mom. And so anyway, we had this visit, and we ended up leaving early for a variety of reasons, and came back home, and I was again trying to find ways to connect with my mom. And it's funny because it was around the time Skype was popular, and I was like, oh, maybe we could Skype, right? Instead of having a phone call or whatever. And I tried to set that up with her, and it wasn't working out. Again, I don't remember all the details, but in the end, I remember getting an email from her that said that she was disappointed in the person that I'd become. And it was at a time in my life when I felt the best I ever had, really. I mean, I had a lot going for me. I was, happy. I was married. I was successful. I, had a lot going for me, and it was like a knife in the heart.
I looked down and I was trying to keep my face can sometimes be like the closed captions of my thoughts in my head. That sounds to me, I was not involved in this experience. First time I'm talking to you, but that just sounds like such a painful thing to hear from somebody who you want to be your cheerleader. You know, like the programming that we get, most of us in the modern world, is that family is automatic and instant, and there's some sort of hidden obligation to be kind to each other, support each other, so on and so forth. And then when our family members don't show up like that for any number of reasons, it's really easy to internalize it, which you said, you know, it's like, what am I doing wrong that I'm not connecting with this person in my family? Or what am I doing wrong that this person is being mean to me? But that's a really direct thing to say to somebody. And we all say, I think, you know, I was so judgmental of the adults in my life when I was a kid and hadn't been through the adult portion of that experience. But it's not like I've had all of the experiences. I've said some dumb things to my kids and my stepkids that I've had to walk back and be like, oh, wow, so sorry about that. But nonetheless, that sounds like something that would have really hurt to have a mom say to you that, you know, it's like when I was a kid, I had a babysitter who once said to me, she's like, that's why there's space between your brain and your mouth so you can think it and not say it.
Right. And when we collectively, right, and I, you know, include myself in this, I include my mom and her mom, right, when we're carrying unconscious trauma, shame, etc., right, that space that your babysitter was talking about doesn't exist, or it doesn't appear to exist. So yeah, that was a very painful moment in my life. And as I said, it's not like it was a surprise. It wasn't the first time she had said something like that to me. But it was the last proverbial straw in that moment.
So that was the cataclysmic of, or the not the cataclysm, that was the last thing that happened. That was the last thing that
I
happened.
want to just also say quickly that I have had contact with my mom in between then and now. And
Oh,
there's,
so yeah.
yeah.
So, all right. So we'll talk about that. So how much contact before this moment where she said this to you, and you realized that you needed to draw a line in the sand or make a barrier for a boundary for yourself? How much contact were you guys having? You were in Connecticut, she was in Maine. How much contact were you guys having at that time?
Just, you know, like, okay, holidays, are we visiting, going up for the summer, you know, calls, emails, that kind of thing. I mean, it wasn't like we were super close and talked every day or anything like that. Again, everybody's different in what they see as normal contact. And you know, for some mothers and daughters, the perfect amount is once a week or every couple of weeks or once a day, or right, there's no judgment on that. It's just ours was, you know, it was, I can't even remember, to be honest. It wasn't like a regimented type of thing.
All right, so there was some geographic distance between you guys. You saw each other for the holidays, and there was some contact, phone contact, email contact, stuff like that in between, but not every day for dinner or not calling
No.
every day to update things. So families can be really complicated. I think that everybody experiences that. Even if you have a teeny tiny family, they can be really complicated. And there's the very real situation that you and I talked a little bit about before we started the conversation, that even if the people in a family have ex the exact same experience at the exact same time, everybody can come away with that with a different version of events and retell the memories and really have a different experience in the same thing. It's really super interesting. Like, I mean, there are definitely events that happened in my family growing up, and my sibling and I have come together as adults, and we tell the stories completely differently. You know, some of them are completely inconsequential and hilarious, and others are a bigger difference. But so this is my long way of just reassuring everybody that, you know, we understand we're talking about your experience with this today. And if you were to talk to any of the other people in your family, they might be like, oh, you know, that I would tell that a little differently. And that's like the accuracy of when we talk about our own families. But let's talk a little bit about what it was like growing up, and your relationship with your mom. So your parents divorced when you were young. Did you go back and forth between the houses? Like, what was it like?
Well, this was 19, so I'm 62, and this was, they got divorced when I was two. My mother actually got on a plane because she it was in Connecticut, a woman couldn't you couldn't get divorced then. She
Right.
got on a plane and flew to Mexico and got a quickie divorce.
I didn't even know that was an option. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And
Wow.
it's funny because as painful as her divorce, as their divorce was on my life, again, just for reference here, right? I admire my mother's kind of
You,
badassery.
yeah, of course. No, you can say whatever you want. It's a
Like looking at her as a woman who made a choice for herself, I was like, that was pretty amazing. But yeah, so they got divorced. My mother met my stepfather, and that was he. They're both alcoholics. He was violent.
Okay.
They were both violent. I, at that time, would go see my dad every 6 weeks.
So you lived with your mom.
I lived with my mom.
Okay.
My dad lived about, I don't know, 45 minutes away at the
Okay.
time. So, but as a young, as really young, when I was like 2 or whatever, I guess I don't even remember that. But like, I would see him every 6 weeks, and that continued pretty much up until, because then he moved to a different state. Not he moved to Rhode Island from Connecticut, which it's not that far. And as I got older and my transportation ability became
Right.
more dependent, right, I got to see him as much as I wanted to.
That is the big shift in when kids are switching back and forth. At some point, when they become in charge of their own travel, sometimes things change a lot. And they as adults, you get to choose the relationship you want to have with your parents. So that also changes. So your mom, so now as an adult, you've got the experience to look back and realize that your mom and your stepdad were actively engaged in too much alcohol consumption, alcoholism, substance misuse, and that was creating what was probably instability in your
Huge.
childhood experience. But as a kid, you may not have realized that because that was your normal. Who else was around as a support network when you were a kid then?
Not many. And it's funny you should say that because I will never forget at one of my various times of having therapy, a therapist asked me about my young life and
Yeah.
who was around, and I'm like nobody. And she was like, wow, you were profoundly neglected. And I
But you
was
didn't know it. Yeah. Yeah.
again, it's like you don't know what you don't know,
That's right. Normal is a moving target,
right?
and you can't know what you don't know. How old were you when you like moved away from home and created some separation then between
Well,
yourself
I went to
and them?
college at age actually 17, which,
Okay.
was one small sort of step. Although, now I often describe how, the word enmeshment is huge, right? And I was, even though I was distant physically, right, my enmeshment with my mother was there for a very long time. But so yeah, that college was one. Right after college, I moved back in with my mom.
Okay.
And that was so one piece of the story, which is interesting to me now in hindsight, is that she divorced my stepfather when I was in college. And so then when I got out of college and moved back home, we became like best friends. And this was the early 80s, and we would like go out to nightclubs and drink and dance and meet men.
Oh, so that's do you when you look back on that, is that a positive memory of you and your mom? Like it was a fun time?
Sort of, but also it's like, ew.
I suppose, yeah, no, it is an interesting, it is an interesting thing. Some people do have very close mom-daughter relationships where they sort of where they do that, and other people don't
Well,
in that
this
way.
was unhealthy. At the time,
Yeah.
it was fun, but I
Okay.
didn't know what I didn't know. And I didn't know how, I mean, some of her behaviors are Jerry Springer-esque.
Okay. All right. So at the time, it felt fun to you because it was age-appropriate behavior for you. Go to clubs, meet men, socialize. And were you at all aware at that time in your, this is you in your early 20s, were you at all aware of the fact that maybe it wasn't exactly age-appropriate for your mom at that time to be hanging out with 20-year-olds drinking and flirting with people?
I mean, it's hard to put myself back in that body, not knowing what I know now. But if I had to guess, I think there probably was a part of me, a very, very small part, that knew that it wasn't healthy. But again, because of the dynamic between my mother and me, let me back up and say, something that I've learned a lot about in the past 10 years, a lot of people have been bringing this up. It's thankfully, right, is how does the human nervous system work?
Yep, that's a
Right. So,
popular topic.
yeah. So there I am, 25, whatever, right? And there was a part of me, I think, that knew that this wasn't healthy, but my nervous system was like, if you don't do this with your mother, you're gonna die. Right,
Yeah.
she will reject you. You're there. It would be if there's a threat associated with not doing what your mother wants you to do.
So did she, so this, so she wanted to be, you describe it as enmeshed, which enmeshment is when, you're just, you're like woven together. And enmeshment in a family is really, really common. That's why, like you combine your bank accounts, you live together, you share appliances, you share food, that, all that stuff. But it can be unhealthy. Sometimes when it's combined with substance use, people use the word codependent, because one of the people becomes a supporter of the dependency, but they're similar topics. So at what point are you, what, at what point do you begin to realize that the relationship with your mom is not good and seek outside support through like therapists or friends or faith-based advisors or whoever it might be?
It's hard to remember that time. I remember I had a boyfriend that ended, he broke my heart, so to speak, when I was in my early 20s. And I remember getting therapy after that. I don't remember specifically if my mother came up or not. Again, it's like the kind of thing where I talk a lot about internalized shame, and it was so much me thinking that it was my problem, not her. So it wasn't like I was going out seeking pro like I need help figuring out my mother. It was
Okay.
what's wrong with me.
All right.
So I'm drawing a little bit of a blank, to be
But
honest.
you were reaching out for support resources starting from
Yes.
your 20s, in a variety of ways. At what point do, so, 'cause part of the th one of the things you brought up in the intake is that is the shame and the connection to trauma. At what point do you realize that that was a part of your past?
Good old Brené Brown.
Really?
Yes, I remember it
Okay.
was what, 2009 or something, when her big TED talk broke out onto the, and I remember going, oh, I have shame.
All right. So that is, so she did. So I think she's done two really epic viral things. One is about vulnerability and the other is about
Yes.
shame. So that is so, such a modern thing. It's really interesting stuff. It's several conversations with people who have had, had self-diagnosis sort of clues from things like, a TED talk or TikTok or whatever it might be. And they sometimes get pushback from, professionals or people in their life, like, oh, you can't go by that. And having just had all these conversations with people, I'm like, I don't know. Like, it seems to be very helpful for people to have this like external thing that brings them into awareness and offers a perspective that all of a sudden shifts. It's like, oh my goodness, this was a missing piece that I didn't have in my self-diagnosis. So you watch the TED talk and you realize that you were feeling shame. Did that feel like a lifting of a a weight off your shoulder, or did it feel like it was opening Pandora's box? Like, oh my gosh, what now?
Both. I mean, what's interesting is that, and I write about this in my in a book that I wrote, is that I learned about it, and then it was like, okay, I'm going to get rid of it. Like, you know, now I have to get rid of that shame, and then now that I know what the problem is, I'll get rid of it, and I'll be good. And what was really interesting is that, you know, I have to find this, the answer. I have to figure it out. How am I going to get rid of this shame that is so painful and that, you know, impacts my life in so many ways that I don't want it to? And the more I tried and couldn't, the worse it got, because I'm like, oh, there really must be something wrong with me that like EFT isn't working and acupuncture isn't working and meditation isn't working and thought work isn't working, right? Like, and I, because I still have this experience.
So that is, so those are some of the modalities you tried. That's really interesting. So EFT, which is
and I love EFT.
And so for people who are watching and listening, EFT is a tool that incorporates rhythmic tapping of your body and restating things to rewire patterns and in our mind. Thought work is a branch of cognitive behavioral therapy, is applied by the coaching world, which is, you know, the really powerful idea that we can use the amazing prefrontal cortex to be intentional about the way we experience our life. And the other one was,
well, just like, you know,
like acupuncture
and, you know, like all the things that you can imagine I've tried, you know?
Yeah, I believe it. I believe it. So the acupuncture, so was it the sort of thing where it was like you really kind of unable to connect with your body and relax because you're unaware of the pressure, or?
It's interesting you say that. No, I mean, I could relax. It's not that I couldn't relax. But I didn't understand shame.
Okay.
The way that I understand it now.
All right. So you go on this self-development sort of mission. You're trying to excise the shame from your body as if it was a scab, right? Like, or like a patch on a pair of jeans or something like that. And you go through this, and this takes you on a self-development sort of trip. Like journey and expedition, you're learning a lot about yourself. And so this is going on, this is between, you know, you're, when you are coming of age to 2010, this, you still have a relationship with your mom, you are working on yourself. In 2010, you have this Thanksgiving experience with your mom. It comes to a head and you decide that you need, that it's the best thing for you to do to limit your exposure to your mom.
Do you want me to tell you what I said?
Yeah.
I was curious
whether or not you said anything or you just sort of just stopped.
Well, it's interesting because it was an email, which was interesting because she usually wouldn't put it in writing. It was always right, you know? So I was like, okay, well, I actually have it here in writing, how she actually thinks about me and feels about me. And in the email, she had also sort of outlined, she accused me of things. And I started to write back. I was like, all, you know, like angry and hurt and upset and wanting to prove her wrong. And I started to take each of the things and say, no, blah, 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 and explain. And something came over me, I don't know what. And I just was like, no. And I deleted it all. And I said, based on what you've said here, I don't ever want to see or talk to you again.
All right. That is definitely drawing a line in the sand. And I'm super curious, like, so you write her back in an email and you're like, I don't want to see any. Does she just, you know, accept that and walk away and be quiet?
What happened? At the time, I had a blog.
Okay.
So, and this brings in my father's death and just some interesting things. So I had a Gmail account, so I blocked my mother's email, so I don't know if she wrote back to me. My father dies unexpectedly the day before New Year's Eve. That in and of itself is a very fascinating story. I wrote about it in my book, so if people want to read about that, they can. He dies unexpectedly. He lived in Florida at the time, and I don't remember how many days later I blogged about his death. And my mother, I guess, was reading my blog, and she emailed my husband, and she said, "Did Karen's father really die? I can't find an obituary." And I was like, did Karen's father really, like, she right. thinks that I would, like, blog about that, and it's not true? Like, what?
So, oh my goodness, that must have felt very, very strange. All right, so you cut off contact as a way to reduce the aggressive attacks. And you set a boundary for yourself. You block her. She still knows how to reach your husband. She's reading your blog. So she's continuing to do some outreach to you and so on and so forth. You said that reducing the contact, going to contact with your mom, you know, it allowed you to heal and unshame this childhood trauma. I'm curious, like, whether or not that began to happen instantly after making the decision, or if there was sort of like an unfolding, unpacking, it took some time before it was allowed to bubble up.
Yeah, I mean, it was certainly a turning point, right? We can't deny that that was something was aware in me that said, you got to take care of yourself in a different way. But I didn't, like, it wasn't instantaneous. It wasn't like I flipped a switch and now I'm all great. Because at the time, in my head, in my body, I was still enmeshed with her.
Yeah.
So even though I had had that boundary, what I understand about boundaries now is that they are about us.
Yeah.
Right. And what we will, how we want to think and feel and act in the world. Yeah. So I was still very much in reaction to her. And so I was trying to do all those things, right, to relieve myself of shame and the guilt and maybe there is something wrong with me and I'm trying all these different things, the EFT, all that, right? And I learned about coaching a couple of years into that. Also, concurrently, what was interesting is that I became my grandmother, my mother's mother. I became my grandmother's legal guardian.
Okay.
In 2011. And was her legal guardian until she died in 2015. So that was another interesting piece, because I was required by law to communicate with my grandmother's heirs, which was her three children, including my mother.
Yeah.
So, but what's interesting is that I learned about coaching and I glommed onto this idea that, like, oh, I can bring these coaching tools to my relationship with my mother and fix it.
Okay. So you were still, like, you were hoping that this could be repaired and this would be fixed. And
because at one point she, and again, it's hard to remember the exact timeline, but it was in that 2011, 12-ish timeline that she sent me a letter in the mail and she basically asked me what I was going to do to fix things.
Okay.
And I was, you know, it's funny, I'm noticing a little bit of shame wanting to creep in here. I was naive enough to sort of be like, oh, you know, I can, you know, now I can fix this because I have these coaching tools.
So, and as somebody who's listening the first time and doesn't know you or your mom or any of the backstory, so I could be way off in left field, one of the patterns that I hear in the things that you've mentioned, and I'm curious whether or not you would say that this was a part of your relationship, it sounds like you were taking responsibility for being the care, like, for the relationship, maintaining the relationship. And I wonder and I wonder whether or not you remember getting any messaging from your mom or the other people in your family that, you know, hey, this is the daughter's job. This is your job. A good daughter, you know, will work hard to have a relationship with your mom. A good daughter sticks with the family, any of that stuff.
What's interesting is that my mother and her mother and her father, for that matter, and they were divorced too. She was estranged from them at various times. So it's not like she had any kind of good, like, good daughters do this kind of
thing. Oh, so yeah, so you didn't get that. All right.
But I did. It wasn't said that way.
Okay.
Right. It was, if you want my approval, if you want me to love you, you will act a certain way. Okay. You will be less than me. You will not outshine me. You will do as I say. You will be there for me. Like, it wasn't, it was energy. It was the energetic, it was our nervous systems reacting and adapting, right? And yeah. As a child, my nervous system, anybody's nervous system, is determining based on the nervous system's perception of what's happening. If I do this, will I stay safe?
Yeah.
And I learned that this behavior keeps me safe. And I learned that staying small and not outshining my mother and not being too happy and not being too exuberant and not being too anything, which on the one hand, she disdained and didn't like, yeah. Right? She had a lot of contempt for me, right? So it was just like, it's like she didn't like me. And when I tried to make her like me, she didn't like it.
Yeah. So one of the theories about one of how this happens, right, is that, you know, as a child, you're doing your best to keep yourself safe, as everybody yeah. is, and that you develop patterns as a kid that make sense as a kid. They don't always keep working as an adult, and they don't even make sense sometimes when you look back as an adult. But this is where these stress responses come in, which is the fight, flight, freeze, and then fawn, which is the people pleasing, try and behave in a way that you were in
it. Flop too.
And flop, which is just, you know, play dead. Yeah. You don't know that this is what you're doing when you do it, and you do it because it's the right way to do it. And then you grow up and you realize, hey, this isn't serving me anymore, which is when she sent you that email that you were like, okay, it doesn't serve me to try and behave in a way to do this. She's going to keep on egging me on. When you cut off contact, would you say that your hope or your goal that you were working towards was still actually as a way to repair this relationship and have a strong relationship with your mom?
No.
Okay. What was the goal then of cutting out? What was your hope?
I mean, at that time, I thought that this was it. It was done.
Okay. Done. Finished. I'm not going to. Yeah.
And I didn't have hope.
Okay. No hope. What has been the impact and the change that has happened in your life as a result? And this is now 15 years. How has your life changed as a result of cutting off contact with this part of your family?
It's been up and down and up and down, but overall, the amount of, contentment that I have in my life, the ability to know myself the way that I do, right? I am not one who's going to say, oh, the silver lining of having an abusive mother is that I became content in my life, right? No. But, you know, also, yeah. It's a gift. It's a huge gift.
Okay.
I also, you know, I have a tendency, I am a big picture thinker. I see patterns big in the big wide world. And I see this is evolution.
Okay.
And as humans evolve, right? And now why are all these kids going no contact and all that, right? It is, I think, because we are shedding patterns, centuries old patterns, thousands of years patterns, that don't serve us anymore, right? So it's like on our individual nervous system level, right? As you said, we learn that this keeps us safe, and then we learn that it doesn't work for us anymore. And I think collectively, that's what we're doing as well.
Right. So then you were able to, when you did this, you were in a position where you could stand on your own two feet. You did not actually require your mom's involvement in your life to be safe. And so sometimes we call this breaking generational cycles. And that seems like it shows up because it's not, you say there's a pattern between your mom and her family, that there was patterns and cycles of estrangement and conflict. And then you're hoping that this is the end of this. It will not continue on in the future.
Yeah, because I didn't have kids.
Well, there you go. That is one way to change the cycle for sure. All right. So, in a second, we're going to do the final questions, but I want to give you a chance to talk about the work you do today. And you've written a book, which is called "You Are Not Your Mother." So, tell us about that.
Basically, I do a lot of one-on-one work with adult daughters and with mothers, I have not yet worked with a mother, and I've had many approach me, but for some reason they're like, I don't know, they won't do it together. And basically I work to help people do three things in their relationships, whether they are in contact or not. And that is to create safety, right? How do I create safety in my body? The next one is creating intentional identity, because as I sort of shared, right, I had a lot of shame-based identities that were adaptations, as a child, that then became words.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that my three are: I'm bad, I'm a selfish, spoiled brat, and I'm a pathetic loser. Those were my three core shame-based identities.
So that was the self-talk that was echoing in your head all the time.
It was internalized. It wasn't mine to begin with, right? So creating intentional identity is basically giving our brains and our bodies an alternative to the shame. Because as I said before, I still haven't figured out how to get rid of it.
Sure.
So now it's, how do I relate to it differently? How do I carry it more safely? How can I relate to those stories differently?
Yeah.
Because my brain will still go there, right? It's a well-worn, you know, the neural pathways are boom, right? Yes. So intentional identity is creating new neural pathways so that your brain has an option, so that like, oh, I'm going down pathetic loser path, but you know what? I'm also a badass.
Yeah.
Whatever, right? I mean, that's a very simplistic way of putting it. And then the third piece, because when we create intentional identity, it is based on what we value, traits that we admire, energies that we want to embody. And then how do we take that intentional identity in support of creating healthy boundaries?
Very nice. Very nice. So that's the work you do. Very good. So you've written a book. The book is You Are Not Your Mother. And the links for Amazon and bookstore.org will be in the show notes, wherever people are listening and watching the show. The easiest way to get the links that are attached to the interviews for the people who are in the audience is to be a subscriber to the Imperfect Adulting email list, because then it lands in your email box. And so it doesn't matter if you're on top of listening to all of the new episodes. You don't have to hunt for a pen while you're listening to the show on your morning run. It's just there. That's what I always recommend. All right, Karen, are you ready for the final three questions?
Yeah.
All right, let's do it. All right, so I'm curious, do you have a set morning routine? And if so, what is it?
I wake up, I look at my phone, I pee, I weigh myself, I get my coffee, I play words with friends.
Very good. Very good. That's it. That's a set routine. I love that. It keeps you like on a routine, and you can do that's I love that you were very honest about that. That's so good. I love it. All right. For entertainment, do you prefer reading books, listening to music, watching TV or movies, or something else altogether?
Reading books.
And this is my unplanned follow-up question. Do you read like physical books or like an e-reader?
Both.
I read
my novels on my Kindle, and nonfiction, I buy the book.
Very cool. All right. Now, what is one food, either a snack food or a dessert type thing, that you find hard to resist or say no to?
Italian ice.
Ooh, lemon or cherry?
Lemon. Or strawberry.
I guess so. All right. Very good. Those are the choices. All right. That's it. Karen C. L. Anderson, thank you so much for being an amazing guest today on the show.
Thank you. It was awesome.
You are very welcome.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.